Welcome to the Women in Sport podcast. Our mission is that no one is excluded from the joy, the fulfillment, and the lifelong benefits of sport. It is early 2026, and we are just really days away now from the start of the Milan Cortina Winter Olympics. We'll be talking about a sport in this episode of the podcast that British women are really good at. We have an extraordinary track record. In fact, we're the most successful nation at women's skeleton in Olympic history. We're joined by a first-time Olympian. I'm going to say, I hope she doesn't mind me putting this pressure on her, a serious medal contender at the Olympics. Her name's Tabby Stoker. Tabby, it's so lovely to have you with us on the Women in Sport podcast. You've just had your kitting out for the Olympics. Is it starting to feel pretty real now?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, the kitting out experience was amazing to feel part of that one Team GB and get my first real pieces of the Milano Cortina kit was extra special. And to do it with my whole teammates, and they brought it down to Bath for us, so it was really accessible and amazing to see somewhere where I've been training for the last 7 years turned into this like Team GB event. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the kit. What are you allowed to say at this point?
Well, they've had a bit of a rebrand, and I'd say the kit is perfect for me, who loves all things pink and fuzzy and cozy. So there's a lot of that. And I think we've got some amazing outer gear and podium gear that I think is just going to make us look really sharp. And seem really, really united as a team. We get to kind of all have the matching kit, which in skeleton we don't always have. So yeah, it feels special for me.
Let's go back to the beginning of your sporting career. So you grew up in Highgate in North London. It doesn't sound like the right sort of place for somebody who's heading for an Olympic career in winter sport. Gymnastics was your first love, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I was encouraged into gymnastics from a really young age. My older sister did it, and it just provides such a brilliant foundation of movement. And it brought me so much joy when I was young. And then when I turned 11, I started doing circus arts. So I was part of a scheme with the National Centre for Circus Arts in Old Street from when I was about 11 till 17, where they just provide support for all of your training and kind of how to manage your schoolwork and your life around all of your training. So I was doing about 25 hours a week of like performance based circus training, whether that's dancing, acting, or flying trapeze, which was my favorite and my specialty, acrobatics, you know, clowning, tightrope, all the types of things. And yeah, that was just absolutely incredible. That gave me, again, such a strong foundation and such a love for moving my body, and it brought a real sense of community within the kind of performance sport, or a different type of performance sport, I guess, for like performing world. So yeah, that's kind of where my sporting background lies.
What's the destination when you're doing circus skills training like that? Is there, I mean, I think we've probably all heard of Cirque du Soleil. Is that the sort of the goal for everyone who's working through that sort of training schedule?
I think that's the biggest one, right? That's the biggest name that people know. But there are hundreds of like wonderful independent circus companies that put on kind of performances all around the world at all different times. And I think a lot of the students who kind of go through the National Centre end up sometimes becoming choreographers or creating groups themselves that then go touring, showing their like different skills and the circus arts essentially. But definitely when I was young, the Cirque du Soleil, you kind of have that in your mind because it's just such a beautiful, immersive show. And that does seem kind of like the pinnacle of circus for a lot of us.
2019, your whole world changes. You took part in the Discover Your Goal Talent ID pathway. What is it and what happened as a result of that?
So the talent ID that I did, Discover Your Gold, it was a kind of nationwide search for undiscovered talent. And a lot of the different sports that maybe don't have as good pathways into them or grassroots programs often use this to find new athletes. So the one that I signed up for, I think skeleton were looking, fast, short track speed skating, women's rugby, I think sevens, rowing, and I think that's all I can remember off the top of my head, but a few sports. And they all kind of have, I guess, a checklist of things that they think an athlete might need to be good at their sport. And I went for a base trial at, I think it was Lee Valley Athletics Centre. And you did things like a short sprint or a kind of explosive power on the watt bike, your arm span, your height, your weight, like very basic kind of sporting data. And from that, the heads of the different sports picked people's profiles. And so I was obviously lucky enough to get picked for skeleton. And then after that, they invited, I guess, a group of us, a few thousand people down to Bath, to have a go at more kind of skeleton specific type training, in the gym and on the push track, which is a kind of dry skeleton start that they have at the University of Bath. It's the only one in the country. And I guess from doing those trials over the span of 3 or 4 months, they whittled it down to about 10 people. So then they took those 10 onto ice, to do the actual skeleton for the first time. So we went to Norway, to a place called Lillehammer, and slid for the first time. And from that, I guess the rest is history. You kind of get selected and move down to Bath and start competing.
Did you love it straight away? Did you just think, this is what I'm here for? This is what I'm meant to do? Or were you a bit kind of like, how did this happen? This is not the sport I ever imagined when I was growing up in North London.
Well, when I think about it now, I'd say I did love it instantly. I would say at the time it was quite a shock. The sensations that you get when you're sliding are very different to anything I'd experienced before. And I think I remember almost feeling in awe that this was a sport that I could do, and something that was now like accessible to me. And you know, being like in the snow in Norway, it was an incredible experience, and I think all of it was yeah, breathtaking. And yeah, like you said, I guess it wasn't, growing up in inner city London, there were lots of paths available to me, and I was very, very fortunate to be shown a lot of different ways my life could go, and to speak to so many inspiring people growing up. And you know, being in London, it's so multicultural and there was lots of opportunity. But I guess winter sport wasn't one of those things that I was shown. And it was definitely a leap of faith on my part to have found this, you know, really niche sport and to go, yeah, I'm off I go, I'm going to dedicate my life to it. And I think a lot of people, my family, friends included, very supportive, but quite confused, because it must have just seemed like such a jump compared to kind of the realms with which I was existing in previously. And to this day, I can't say exactly what it was that made me want to do that, but something just called to me. And I'm really glad that I trusted myself.
I've heard you talk about yourself when you were a kid, not despite all the things we've said about gymnastics and circus training, it's not necessarily feeling like you were sporty, that it wasn't like a dream or a goal for you.
Yeah, I guess I my schooling I always took really seriously. My dad passed away when I was quite young, and because of that I was able to be put through private school. And I was always quite aware that it was a real privilege, and to be given the opportunity to go to a really good school, and my academics felt like something that I wanted to take really seriously and put a lot into because of the kind of manner in which I'd been given that opportunity. So I think although I did have the opportunity to do sports, I ended up going to school in the Barbican at City of London School for Girls. I had an amazing time there, but the sport facilities, it's a very, very small school and mainly concrete. We didn't have any grass, we weren't playing fields, and it was a very small group as well of children. So you don't have like a very large kind of comparison of like if you're good at sport, you're not good at sport. Like everyone was doing sport. So I might have been sporty within that group, but I was also kind of aware that it was a very small pool of people. So yeah, I guess I was sporty, but I was just aware of the context of my sportiness and aware that, compared to some of the girls that we'd maybe go and play a netball match against who went to a sports school, that I was nowhere near their level of sporty. So it was always something that brought me joy and I did for my mental health. And I really loved moving my body, but I didn't see it as a kind of viable career option.
I should do full disclosure at this point. You and I have never met before, but I know your mum. I went to school with your mum, and it was just you talking about sport at school made me think about your mum, Alison, who was an extraordinary runner. She was like, there was no hope for the rest of us on sports day. Your mum was so flipping quick. And I guess people won't know that about your mum because she didn't have an elite sports career. They'll have heard of your uncle, though, won't they?
Dwayne Ladeja. He went to two Olympics, and medal, I think, with the 4x400 relay.
So your mum is insanely proud of you. I'm sure you're aware of that. And we see the most brilliant videos of you, all of her, social media friends. What must it be like for her? Does she ever talk to you about what it's like watching you compete in a sport where you're going head first at 140 kilometers per hour?
Yeah, she does. I think initially all of my family were a little bit worried because when you're learning, you do obviously crash a bit and get hurt a bit. And when they don't fully understand like the way in which you're controlling the sled and the things that you have to go through, it's kind of terrifying when I pick up the phone. I'm like, oh, I've got a terrible bruise from my hip all the way down to my ankle. And I've just come off my sled and I've knocked myself out. And she's worrying about me. But they've all definitely said as the years have gone on and they can see me becoming way more skilled in this area that they now just feel so excited and so joyful on my behalf. And they love watching it now because they're watching to see me kind of succeed and to fulfill my potential and to hopefully get on the podium that week. So I think the stage that I'm at now, for them, they find it really exciting to watch the racing and they understand so much more about the sport. But initially, I think that was definitely a bit of worry.
You're the current European silver medalist. So you've come from entering the sport in 2019. It's 2026. It's an Olympic year. You're going to the Olympics. You're the current European silver medalist. And we have this extraordinary reputation for women's skeleton. How do you cope with the pressure?
That's such a tricky question because I feel like it's such a privilege to be in a position where people are looking at you to see success. I think I've always wanted to put myself in that position. So to feel like I'm going into this Olympic Games with a few people almost like backing me, being like, yeah, we believe that you can do it. It feels exciting. It feels like it's fueling me. And there is a bit of internal pressure because I'd love to come away from the Olympics with positive memories of my experience. And I'm hoping that by doing my very, very best on all of the race days, that will be fulfilling to me. And we've seen this season that when I can lay down my best runs, I have the potential to medal. I have the potential to be a real contender. So I guess I'm kind of coming in at it from that angle of like, if I can put down what I believe I'm capable of and what all these other people are telling me they also believe I'm capable of and use that to fuel me, then hopefully I'm going to have the best Olympics possible and I'll come away with whatever that result is, feeling so proud of myself.
Help us out. Help the Women in Sport podcast listeners out. Just describe it to us. What do you actually do from start to finish of a race?
Okay, so imagine that it's freezing cold, it's maybe minus 15 degrees, and you've just taken off all your clothes apart from a lycra skin suit and you're stood on ice. So you can almost like feel the cold radiating from the floor and your chest is pounding, you can hear your heartbeat in your ears. You pull a helmet on your head and it's quite like a claustrophobic sensation. You can like smell your helmet and all the like sweaty, like that kind of like, like a changing room smell almost from the inside of your helmet. But it's comforting because that's like a safe space for you. It just becomes you and the ice in front of you. And then your sled's laid down in front of you. You hear a little bing bong, which means off you go. Your 30-second timer has started. You can start. Bend down and it's just the most familiar movement now that you reach out, you grab hold of your sled, and you start running as fast as you possibly can, putting everything you can into the ground. Then you take almost like a leap of faith, a jump. We call it the load, where you load onto the sled, and all of a sudden it's just you and your breath and the sled and the ice about this far from your face, and you can just see like blinding white because that's the ice in front of you, and you're about to have the craziest about 60 second ride of your life. And you can feel every bump, every vibration, like you're trying to be so relaxed onto this sled, and your arms are kind of tucked underneath you, your body's tucked in but relaxed, and you just have this like laser focus of what you're about to do. And you start to feel the speed building. You can feel the wind coming past you. You can feel yourself going up into corners and the G force. Your head's being pressed down into the ice. And for me, it's almost like dancing or something. It's like there's such a flow to what you're doing because by that point, you know what you need to do. You know the movements that you need to make with your shoulders, with your knees, with your toes, with your head. It's just a rhythm for 60 seconds, and you cross the finish line, and you've gone the fastest you've ever gone. And you look up, and you can see people with GB flags, and you can see a clock with a timer and hopefully a number one on it. And then you dig your feet into the ice to try and slow down and hopefully do a good job of braking. But yeah, that's a run basically, in my words.
I have never heard anyone describe their sport so exquisitely. I felt like I was with you for that description. What an amazing thing to do with your life. What an amazing thing to do. Do you feel, I don't, there's no reason you should feel grateful, but blessed maybe?
You know what? I feel both of those things, and I often try to bring gratitude into every day because to be in the position I'm in currently, where I'm doing something that makes me so happy, and it's my career, and there's all these people who I know or who I don't know who are cheering me on, and a lot of people don't ever get the chance to dedicate their life to something that really brings them joy. And so even in the hard moments, or when I'm injured, or when I'm really tired, or when I'm missing family birthdays and Christmas and those moments that, you know, bring happiness into like everyday life, I just remember to be so grateful that this is the path that I've taken. And I get to meet amazing people from all over the world and travel, and also like dedicate so much time to myself. And I think at my age, I'm 25, to be able to really know myself in the way that I feel I do currently, and to get the space and support to kind of discover who I am and the way I want to show up in the world. Again, just I'm so grateful that I've taken this path because I know that going forward into whatever I do next, I have such a strong sense of identity now.
What have you learned about yourself then through skeleton? Who are you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm bubbly and charismatic. I care deeply. I care deeply about others and about the way that I impact people. And I have so much love to extend to people. I like listening to people's stories. I think everyone deserves the opportunity to be heard, and that you should always enter any situation with compassion before anything else. Everyone's got their own life and their own things that are going on for them, and you can't begin to understand someone else's journey without listening. I know that I love getting up early in the morning, even if it's tiring. It energizes me. I love being outside in nature. And I love, what else do I love? So much, I guess. But there's also like kind of the smaller things that, for instance, like even understanding my body and like the foods that I'm able to eat and the ways like the aches and pains that I feel and all that type of stuff. Like we have like such a strong support system within the British Skeleton Team, and you're really given that space to like learn about you and your body, and I've like learned so much that like I probably would have just brushed aside had it not been so important for my job. And so even things like that I just feel really lucky to have like had the space and the support to learn all of that, so that I know how almost how to take care of myself really well.
You also love risk and danger, or do you just accept that they're part of the job?
I think the adrenaline from skeleton is definitely addictive. I do think it is addictive. And I think the fear element and the danger element is something that you learn to ignore. You learn to accept that that is part of it, and that fear isn't like you can channel it into excitement and into preparation, because those kind of somatic feelings that you get where your heart starts going, you're sweating, and you feel lightheaded. You could say, oh, I'm really scared, or you could say, my body is ready for what I'm about to do, because that means that you're switched on, that means you're prepared, that means you understand that you're about to take a risk, and therefore you're ready to respond. And almost if your body stops responding like that before you're going to hurl yourself head first down an ice track at 140 kilometers an hour, that's probably more of a red flag than those feelings. So I think I've definitely learned to really accept them and channel them.
How important do you think sport is for girls? I'm listening to you talking about all the things you've learned about yourself. And I know you follow us. You follow us at Women in Sport, and you're aware of our data. And you know we talk a lot about girls dropping out of sport in their teenage years. What are they losing? What are they missing out on? I mean, we're never all going to be at the Olympics. We're never all going to be. I mean, I can't tell you how envious I am when you talk about it. I just think, what a life. But there's so much else. I said at the beginning, we talk about we don't want anyone to miss out on the joy, the fulfillment, and the lifelong benefits, including health benefits and mental health benefits. How important is it to you that girls can look at somebody like you and think, I belong in sport too?
Yeah, I think that's part of why I'm so passionate about what I do. I really hope to inspire loads of women and girls to get into physical activity and just to move their bodies. I did not imagine myself as an athlete until I was almost 18 years old. Like this wasn't a dream of mine from when I was a child. It was a dream that was awoken in me because of being inspired and being told that I had potential in something. And if I had dropped out at any point before that, I wouldn't be in this position today. And that was pretty much my whole childhood, really. At 18, that's when my sporting career started. And so I feel really strongly that girls especially need to just stick at it. It doesn't matter if you aren't the best at it. It doesn't matter if, it's cold or it's uncomfortable. Like those pushing through things like that and learning how to find joy in moving your body is so important. And the sense of community that it can bring too, and connection, because I think it's so easy nowadays to lose that. And I think sport is always an amazing way to connect with other people. And so I think even if you don't see yourself in a space, but within like a certain sport, but it sounds appealing to you, that's an amazing way to kind of just push yourself slightly outside of your comfort zone and go for it and give it a try. Because you will never learn what you're capable of, what your potential is, until you do that. And so yeah, I just because of my own journey, I feel so strongly that, sport is amazing for performance, for careers and for everything, but just for that pure enjoyment, and like you say, for all the health benefits, I just think it's so important that girls keep at it.
I remember enjoying, before you discovered skeleton, what do you remember loving? Do you have a sort of memories of childhood sport? We talked about your mum being very sporty. Is she a sort of presence in your mind when you think about yourself growing up in sport and your sister as well?
Yeah, absolutely. They both really encouraged me to stay active. And, starting in gymnastics, I had all my sister's hand-me-down leotards. And I remember my coach was someone who trained with my sister. And I was never amazing at gymnastics. I was never gonna, make an Olympics in that sport. That was pretty clear from, I don't know, from about 8 years old. But I loved it. And I got to move, and the dance and the general kind of body awareness, spatial awareness and strength. And I love, like, I think I said it to you before, I love like pink and sparkles and that type of stuff. And gymnastics really also brought that into it. It was that side of the creativity, and you got to put glitter on your eyes and dance around. And so there was all of that. And then my mum obviously was sporty when she was younger, and I never really got the opportunity to do athletics. But she did used to walk me to primary school, and we'd walk past an athletics track, and I would always hop over the fence and run around the 400 meters and then catch up with her again. And she would encourage me to do that every day just to move my body, because she used to say, "Oh, you're a bundle of energy, you've just got to keep like have an outlet for that." So yeah, I always think of that, and think of her whenever I see an athletics track now.
Do you ever think there could have been another sport that you could have been equally good at? I mean, running is definitely in the DNA in your family, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think, there's always kind of ifs and buts and maybes. And I have actually spoken to my coaches a few times, being like, "Oh, I wonder, like, if I had started sooner, what sport do you think I maybe would have been good at?" And they definitely sometimes say to me after teaching me how to run, because when I started skeleton, I didn't know how to run. Not with any good technique. So they've kind of taught me that, and obviously I've learned to run bent over with my sled. But they definitely said that had I maybe wanted to do it earlier, I would have had some like good physical qualities for doing athletics. It's strange. It wasn't my dream at that time, so I don't really feel any regret for that. The things that I got to do, the sports that I loved, which were all very performance based, with the circus arts, with the gymnastics, and I didn't allow myself to be pushed into the sport that didn't align with me. I think I've always been a bit strong-willed in that sense, and I just did the sports that I loved and I enjoyed, and so almost for me, it feels like that set me on the path that I ended up needing to be on, to get me to where I am now. But yeah, there is talk of if I had done athletics, how it would have gone.
I'm so happy that you're in skeleton. It's just so amazing to watch you. It's such a privilege. And I was so thrilled when your mum first started telling us what was going on with your sports career. It's just so lovely to see that happening for somebody that you knew when you were a kid, to see their joy and pleasure in their child's achievement is a really beautiful thing. You talked about encouraging and hoping to inspire and encourage teenage girls to stay in sport. What else do you think needs to happen to create an environment where they feel they can? Because at Women in Sport, we research off the back of major sports events. We look at girls' ability to dream of reaching the top. And we thought it would be stay pretty high last year with there was a massive, everyone talked about the summer of women's sport, didn't they, with the Lionesses and with the Red Roses and all sorts of other brilliant women's sporting events last summer. But when we did the research, there was a real nosedive in girls' ability to dream. And we wondered whether that's because, as well as the visibility of success, with that comes, I'm going to just speak really bluntly, the visibility of hate as well. That there are people out there who are men out there largely who are really dragging women down who take up space in sport. Have you clocked that, or do you just try and keep that as much as you can at arm's length?
Yeah, I've definitely seen that, and I think I'm fortunate to have not faced that too much, as skeleton is quite niche and we don't have as much like media interest as some of these other big sports like football and rugby. But it has been terrible to see some of the hate that these women have had to go through just for doing their sport, and to a really high level as well. And I think there is definitely a bad narrative around comparing women's sport to men's sport. You see it especially, I've seen with women's football, for instance, and people talking about the standard of it, and almost using that as an excuse for spewing hate when we're not trying to take away any space from the men's sport, and we're not trying to be male footballers, they're female footballers. And, it hasn't had as much investment and as many girls getting into it yet. So obviously the standards take time. But yeah, it's things like that. I just think it's really disappointing that people feel the need to make those types of comments and to be hateful on these women who are genuinely inspiring girls to get into sport. And then I guess touching on kind of what you said about there's been, a dip with teenage girls, I think, it's definitely not something to ignore that girls at that stage in their life then start going through puberty, and women's health has such an impact on their ability to be able to do sports. And I firsthand have had like problems with my periods and with my like f female reproductive system, and that can be really debilitating and stop you from taking part even if you wanted to. So yes, the representation is important to see that it is possible for you, but I think also there's needs to definitely be even more investment and time based into getting awareness and spaces where girls can feel comfortable to get the help that they need so they feel good within their body so they can start moving it.
You wish your sport had greater visibility, or actually, is that in some ways a blessing?
I think I do wish it had greater visibility, because of what it's brought to me in my life. And I do think it is just an amazing sport and really teaches people to push their own boundaries and break through fear. But I do definitely feel grateful for the way it has potentially shielded me from some of this hate and comparison and just the negative sides that media and social media in general can bring to a woman doing sport at a high level. But I think I would take that and manage that in order to get the sport and myself out there more to try and inspire and get more engagement in it.
Let's talk about the Olympics that are just days away now. What are your final preparations going to look like? I mean, I'm guessing you're ready now, aren't you? You're ready to just take your place in history, I think.
Yeah, I'm feeling so inspired by all the women who've come before me within skeleton. Like, we've had so much success, and knowing that the British skeleton team rallied around them and they were able to achieve their dreams gives me so much trust in the process that I've been through for the last 7 years getting to this games. So yeah, but in the immediate future, I'm on in a few days going out to St. Moritz for a holding camp with my team where we'll do team bonding and some training. And then on the 1st of February, we'll be going to the Olympic Village. And then we'll be there until we compete the 13th, 14th, and 15th of February. So it's all very soon. It's all feeling very real. And I'm just excited to start because I'm ready to do my final competitions of the year and put everything I've learnt up to this point to the test.
What are you, dare I ask, what are you hoping for at this Olympics? What do you believe you are capable of? Don't hold back on me now. I really want to hear it.
Look, I believe wholeheartedly in myself and my team and my preparation for this Olympics, and I believe that I'm going to have the best runs I have ever had in my life over these four heats in the games. And I know that my best can be the best.
Send a shiver down my spine. Do you send a shiver down your own spine sometimes when you really believe in yourself?
Definitely, we had some really inspirational videos played for us yesterday at the kitting out, and I was struggling not to cry. I was really struggling not to cry. Just the ways in which some of these athletes were articulating their dreams and the fire in their belly and the legacy that we're continuing by being part of Team GB, it was setting me off.
I'm so excited for you. I'm so thrilled that we got the chance to listen to you before you go. We will be absolutely rooting for you. You are a complete dream. You're everything I ever hope that women and girls can be and see in sport. Tabby, absolutely every fiber of my being is wishing you good luck for the Olympics. Thank you so much for joining us on the Women in Sport podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for those kind words. I really felt them in my heart, so thank you.
Such a pleasure to bring you that conversation with Tabby Stoker. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you next time.